It's an opportunity for the U.S. to come back onto the scene to show that it's taking climate change seriously.
Climate change, an important focus in Asia and around the world. It's Wednesday, April 21st. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're online. You can find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, NASA helps you monitor climate, the changing Mekong River, another COVID Ramadan, Muslim leaders promote vaccination, a religious disaster app. It's all on today's VOA Asia. We open today's VOA Asia program with a decision in a very high-profile trial. A jury in Minneapolis, Minnesota, has reached a verdict in the trial of Derek Chauvin, a white former police officer who in May 2020 restrained George Floyd, a black man, on the ground and placed his knee on Floyd's neck for more than 9 minutes, during which time George Floyd died. The jury, including 6 white members, 4 black and 2 multiracial, reached a decision after more than 10 hours of deliberations. Judge Peter Cahill read the decision.
Members of the jury, I will now read the verdicts as they will appear in the permanent records of the 4th Judicial District. State of Minnesota, County of Hennepin, District Court, 4th Judicial District. State of Minnesota Plaintiff versus Derek Michael Chauvin, Defendant. Verdict, Count 1. Court File Number 27, CR20. 12646. We, the jury, in the above entitled matter as to count 1, unintentional second degree murder while committing a felony, find the defendant guilty. This verdict agreed to this 20th day of April 2021 at 1:44 p.m. Signed, juror foreperson, juror number 19. Same caption, verdict count 2. We, the jury, in the above entitled matter as to count 2, third degree murder perpetrating an eminently dangerous act, find the defendant guilty. This verdict agreed to this 20th day of April 2021 at 1:45 p.m. Signed by jury foreperson, juror number 19. Same caption, verdict count 3. We, the jury, in the above entitled matter as to count 3, second degree manslaughter, culpable negligence, creating an unreasonable risk, find the defendant guilty. This verdict agreed to this 20th day of April 2021 at 1:45 p.m. Jury foreperson 019.
Derek Chauvin calmly watched as the verdicts were read and nodded to the court at the conclusion. He was remanded into custody ahead of sentencing, which will be scheduled for a later date pending any appeal. The former Minneapolis police officer could have been found not guilty on all charges. That's a common outcome in police misconduct cases, but one that in this case would almost certainly have led to unrest across the country. Still, police departments across the United States are ready for potential protests, regardless of the outcome. Thousands of National Guard soldiers have been deployed throughout Minneapolis, where George Floyd was killed. In Washington, D.C., 250 National Guard troops have been activated. The Chicago Police Department has deployed extra resources throughout its city. In Los Angeles, the LAPD said it has retrained thousands of officers in crowd control tactics. The verdicts were read just prior to our airtime, and you may find more as the story develops by following VOA Asia on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. VOA Asia will have more in depth on the trial on tomorrow's program. Thursday is Earth Day, and President Joe Biden has invited 40 world leaders to a virtual summit on climate change. It is an issue of particular concern in Asia, as it is elsewhere in the world. The United States is in a precarious position internationally after the Trump administration withdrew from the United Nations Paris Climate Agreement. Advocates expect Biden to turn things around, but delivering will not be easy. VOA's Steve Barragona reports.
We're going to rejoin the Paris Climate Accord as of today.
On his first day in office, President Joe Biden aimed to demonstrate that climate change would be at the top of his agenda. Biden's Earth Day summit intends to show world leaders that things have changed from the Trump administration's disregard for the issue.
It's an opportunity for the U.S. to come back onto the scene to show that it's taking climate change seriously.
The stakes are rising. The consequences of climate change are becoming ever more apparent, with more wildfires, deeper droughts, and stronger storms. The 2015 UN Paris Climate Agreement aimed to put a lid on global warming, But experts say the goal set in Paris is slipping away.
We're at grave risk right now. We're seeing temperatures continuing to climb. We're seeing emissions continuing to climb, going in the opposite direction from where they need to. And that's why so many are calling this a make or break decade.
Global emissions have been on a steady upward path for decades. Current policies will continue adding to the problem. But Wasco says emissions need to fall by nearly half by 2030 to be on a path that avoids the worst impacts of climate change.
If you don't start bending that curve now, the trajectory that one would have to be on following 2030 is just, you know, one that would be incredibly difficult to achieve.
Advocates are calling on Biden to announce a 50% cut in U.S. emissions by 2030. The White House says it will announce its target ahead of the summit.
Good.
Biden sees opportunities in fighting climate change, like building solar and wind power and electric vehicle charging stations, jobs that cannot be shipped overseas. It's a cornerstone of his $2.3 trillion infrastructure plan.
The American Jobs Plan will lead to a transformational progress in our effort to tackle climate change with American jobs and American ingenuity.
But Congress would have to pass that plan, and Republicans are solidly opposed.
It is a massive expansion of the government, financed on the backs of the American taxpayers, with taxes that will hurt the economy and cost us jobs.
It's not clear the United States will make the cuts Biden wants. That weakens the U.S. position globally.
Until we can sort out those politics, it's going to be tough for us to claim this leadership mantle internationally on the top line numbers.
Meanwhile, eyes are on other major polluters, including China, the world's biggest, and India, a rising source, to announce their climate plans ahead of a major UN conference in Glasgow in November. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
Coming up, NASA has an app for you to use to participate in climate projects. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Former UN chief says fleeting window of opportunity to resolve Myanmar crisis. China rejects accusations of abuses in Xinjiang. Human Rights Watch calls out China's crimes against humanity toward Uyghurs. Pakistan opens talks with outlawed Islamists behind violent anti-France protests. Afghan youth concerned about U.S. troop pullout. You'll find much more on these stories, expanded with videos and photos, on Facebook at VOA Asia and at our website, voanews.com. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. NASA, the U.S. space agency, has developed an app that allows citizen scientists around the world to participate in an Earth science project. VOA's Julie Tabo has more.
People across the U.S. and around the world are helping scientists at NASA, the U.S. space agency, with an Earth science project. Using an app on their phones, citizen scientists measure the height and width of local trees and share the data with NASA scientists to help them assess the amount of carbon being stored by trees.
We're here at Bowling Green State University, and I have Megan Recker. We're going to be doing a tree observation using the Globe Observer app. Are you ready, Megan?
Oh, yeah.
Participants open the app and select trees from the four main tools.
Now, in order to get the height of the tree, she's got to start with the base of the tree.
Then she'll take a photo of the top of the tree.
And then a picture of the entire tree. Megan then walks to the tree, counting her steps to determine the distance.
28 steps. We're going to set our longitude and latitude positions.
So now we have the final results,
which show that this tree is about 16 meters tall.
And now Megan's going to send all her tree data to Globe so that the Globe scientists have access to the measurements that Megan just took.
NASA has satellites orbiting the Earth that measure tree heights from space. The data from app users complements NASA's space observations to help scientists better understand the carbon that trees either take in or release into the atmosphere.
So NASA can actually use our data that we've collected from the ground to monitor how good their models are. Are their satellites measuring tree height accurately?
Smartphone technology, the stuff we carry in our pocket every day, includes some pretty sophisticated tools that are useful for data collection. And so when we realized that the technology was advanced enough, we were able to combine those into a tool to bring the public into data collection.
Using the tree tool inspired nature lover Candace Gossin to organize group hikes in the old-growth forests of Mount Tabor in Portland, Oregon, and get them involved.
I bring along the app, I bring along the phone, I explain what we're doing. Not only we talk about tree medicine, but we're also talking about how we collectively together are walking and sharing this information with the rest of the world. And so by taking the photos and sharing the information through this app, it becomes a database that anyone anywhere can see.
Julie Tavo, VOA News.
The U.S. Space Agency NASA received images and data confirming its small helicopter, Ingenuity, successfully performed the first controlled powered flight of an aircraft on a planet other than Earth. Scientists in the control room at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory at the California Institute of Technology burst into applause and cheers when data confirmed Ingenuity had successfully spun its rotors, lifted off to a height of 3 meters, and landed safely back to the surface of Mars. The helicopter is considered by NASA to be a technology demonstration designed to test a new capability, in this case flight, in the thin Martian atmosphere for the first time. Aside from cameras, Ingenuity carries no scientific instruments. Happening now in Asia, New Delhi imposed a week-long lockdown to prevent the collapse of the city's health system, causing busloads of migrant workers to flee the city before the lockdown began. India has reported more than 15 million confirmed COVID-19 cases. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We hope the day is nice where you are, and we're glad to have you with us on VOA Asia. The Mekong is one of the world's great rivers, a 5,000-kilometer waterway which threads from China through Laos, Thailand, Cambodia, and Vietnam. However, dams have subverted the ecosystem, bringing drought in the monsoon season and high water when it should be dry. That has forever changed the lives of those dependent on the water for food and work in northeastern Thailand. Uitra Dongdi is in Nong Khai, Thailand, from where we hear this report.
Panning for flecks of gold on the banks of the Mekong River in northeastern Thailand. Rotana Tebuong says the waterway has been her playground, food supply, and source of income throughout her 64 years. It is changing at a speed she can barely believe. She says that when she was younger, the water would be so low in the dry season that she could walk over to the Lao side, a few hundred meters away. Now the water rises in the dry season, so she stays on the Thai side of the river and pans for tiny amounts of gold. Upstream dams, many built by China, have upended the natural cycles of the river, a waterway that feeds 60 million people as it snakes through Laos, Thailand, Cambodia, Myanmar, and Vietnam. The riverbank used to provide farmland to the poorest Mekong villagers. Now water levels rise and fall without warning when the dams are closed to generate electricity, and the land yields little. Campaigners say fish species have been decimated as the river downstream now lacks vital sediment, sending a shock through the entire ecosystem. Locals fear a new $2 billion China-backed hydroelectric dam planned for Sanakam on the Mekong in Laos, less than 2 kilometers away, will be the end of the living river in northern Thailand because it will lack sediment, which will provide nutrients for fish. The dam is currently undergoing a consultation process, but that is widely seen as a formality. From a rare conservation area on the Thai bank, a few kilometers downstream from the proposed dam, local researcher Apisisun Thorawirat maps the destruction of the river. He says the Chinese and Lao dams have ruined the ecosystem and dozens of species of fish have vanished as their habitat shrinks due to the lack of sediment. Dam operators say they have taken all precautions to mitigate environmental damage, including creating a fish ladder to allow species to migrate during spawning season. From his riverside view, Apisis says big business in China, Laos, and Thailand is wringing money from a shared natural resource. He says villagers are not getting the benefits of the dams. Instead, the gain goes to the big businesses behind the hydropower. From a small hut, a network of fishermen defends the river from the big hydropower plants, a holdout outsized by the business interests ranged against them. Fisherman Chai Wat says locals call the Mekong the river of life, and all they want is for it to be returned to them so they can live from its bounty, even if it's not the same as before. With fish stocks depleted, many fishers have left the waterway for work in rubber fields or factories in the city. And for those who eke out a living from the river, another proposed dam in Pak Shom, the first across the Thai stretch of water, will make the people who still eat, live, and work along its waters destitute. Fisher Sutta in Samran has a simple plea. It's time to stop building dams, he says, and return the Mekong River to the people. Wichitra Dungdi for VOA News, Nong Khai, Thailand.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. A Chinese foreign ministry spokesman said accusations of forced labor or detentions in the Xinjiang region are, quote, lies and false information concocted by anti-China forces, after a human rights group appealed for a UN investigation on the region. All the big stories come your way through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, Muslims are currently observing the holy month of Ramadan. But with COVID restrictions still in place, mosques have had to grapple with how to keep worshippers safe. VOA's Alam Burhanan has details in this report narrated by Nova Parwadi.
This is the second Ramadan taking place during the COVID-19 pandemic that is affecting Muslims around the world. But unlike last year, Muslims in the U.S. can congregate for prayer in person at mosques while observing local guidelines. This is the case at Imam Center in Silver Spring, Maryland, just outside Washington, D.C.
The regulation laid out by the county our mosque is in, Montgomery County, allows all houses of worship to increase their capacity to 50%. This means around 200 worshippers can pray here. Of course, we follow health protocols like mandating masks and checking everyone's temperature.
It's a similar situation in a mosque in Detroit, Michigan. Mosques are open again for the five daily prayers and also for the nightly congregational prayer through Ramadan, the Taraweeh. Both mosques stream the prayer so that worshippers at home can still tune in to the nightly sermon.
So, inshallah, the Prophet Muhammad.
What hasn't changed from last year are religious studies and other activities, which continue online. While iftar, or the communal breaking of the fast, is now drive-through only, congregants pick up sweets and food to break their fasts at home. For VOA's Alam Burhanan, I'm Nova Purwadi, VOA.
Making headlines in Asia, Pakistan's parliament began debating a resolution on whether the French ambassador should be ordered to leave the country over the publication of anti-Islam caricatures in France. The proposed resolution is to defuse days of deadly nationwide anti-France demonstrations. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, mosques in the Midwestern U.S. state of Minnesota are urging worshippers, including people from the East African diaspora, to get vaccinated against COVID-19. Leaders of the faith say receiving a vaccine is a religious duty because it saves lives. For VOA, Syed Salah has more in this report, narrated by Carol Gunsberg.
Sharif Mohammed, the Imam of Dar al-Hijra Islamic Center in Minneapolis, Minnesota, is using his sermon at a midday prayer to try to boost the Somali American community's confidence in the COVID-19 vaccine. In collaboration with medical professionals, the mosque is hosting a vaccination clinic.
And we are trying to put the faith and the health care together. And when the people see and the community see their mosques, the mosques, they come and pray. We also hold a vaccine.
It's part of a nationwide effort in which religious leaders of all faiths have been enlisted to support vaccination, especially among people of color. The head of the National Institutes of Health made that point at a recent vaccination clinic at the U.S. National Cathedral in Washington.
Unfortunately, many who could most benefit because they are at highest risk of serious and even life-threatening infections are still holding back. Houses of worship are houses of hope.
Community organizations involved with this program say immigrants need to protect each other by getting vaccinations.
And the immigrant community in particular, we grow up in multi-generational households. And so to protect one another, we must wear our masks like we are today, and we must also get vaccinations.
In the United States overall, more than half of all COVID cases and almost half of all the country's 550,000 deaths have been among people of color, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. For Syed Salah in Minneapolis, Carol Gunsberg, VOA News.
Religious organizations in the United States are a key part of a community's response to a disaster. As Mike O'Sullivan reports, a new smartphone app is helping coordinate that response between relief workers and faith groups while making it more effective.
In the devastating 2018 fire in Paradise, California, religious congregations were among the stricken. They were also part of the response, with churches hosting shelters. The same thing happened in Houston, Texas, after flooding in 2017. Religious groups have always had a social mission, but it was Hurricane Katrina in 2005 that accelerated their role in responding to disaster.
It was really after Katrina that there was a real realignment of understanding from the federal government side that faith communities were important actors in the disaster response system and that they needed to be part of the sort of whole community approach.
Lascota runs the Center for Religion and Civic Culture at the University of Southern California in Los Angeles. It helped develop a smartphone app to educate relief workers about different religions and faith groups to help them deal more effectively with disaster victims from different backgrounds. It's common for faith groups around the world to pitch in after disasters. In the U.S., Islamic Relief USA provided emergency aid after the Paradise Fire and sealed roofs after hurricanes in North Carolina.
Tarping roofs after hurricanes and tornadoes and whatnot. So they're just well-developed system that, you know, the sort of collection of organizations have really developed over the year after Katrina.
The new app, called Disasters and Religions, puts information at a user's fingertips.
As opposed to just going through, you know, doing tons of research online to making sure that you're being sensitive to the individuals that you're dealing with.
Necessary information for helping people recover after disasters. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
That's our program for today. Thanks for joining us on VOA Asia. We continue online. You'll find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Just look us up under our name, VOA Asia. We also thank our VOA Asia team, managing editor Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.